when he came home, he was physically unable to do farming, so he got a barber's license and had a barber shop in Stillwell. He cut the hair of a fellow by the name of Pretty Boy Floyd, who, according to my grandfather, was not robbing banks at the time, but he may have been transporting illegal liquor. My grandparents actually attended Pretty Boy Floyd's funeral at Aiken Cemetery. He said it was kind of almost a carnival atmosphere.
Was it well attended?
Oh, there were thousands of people there, and it was an open casket funeral, and people stood in line to go by and see Pretty Boy Floyd. Granddad said it was almost like a picnic, that people brought food and quilts and put on the ground until it was their turn to go by. And by the time he got there, he said Pretty Boy was almost snatched bald, that people would reach in the casket and take buttons off of his shirt. He said finally they had to get family members with shotguns to stand at the corners of his casket to keep people from just practically, you know, unclothing him there. And if you go to Aiken Cemetery today, it's over in Skoyu County. He's on his third headstone, because people will go there and chip away and take a little souvenir of Pretty Boy Floyd.
You know, there's a phenomenon going on here, because criminals, robbers, whatever, were celebrated.
They were. And, you know, oddly enough, we're kind of seeing a return to that.
We have seen that.
Yeah, and I find that disturbing.
Right. It's very disturbing. And that Pretty Boy Floyd, they applauded when he got away.
There was this strange concept in the late 19th century, you know, whether it was the James Gang or the Daltons or Pretty Boy Floyd or some of these other evil people, that somehow ordinary common folk were cheering them on. Maybe it was the socioeconomic gap between the wealthy and the elite and those that were struggling.
So he was stealing from the rich.
Allegedly giving to the poor, but I really don't think that there was much going on the poor side. Now, I would tell you that my grandfather was a great musician. He was a reader. He was a writer. He could Jalagi, Osta, his Cherokee was good. He could speak. He could write in Cherokee. I credit him with my Cherokee language. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, I was visiting him at his little not so good abode, because he lived in Watts, and he had a little garden out back. And I said, Granddad, I said, there is a rabbit in your garden. He's going to eat your lettuce. And he removed his pipe from his mouth. He said, you know, he's not going to eat that much. And he said, we'll just leave him there. And he said, besides, he said, you know, that's not his real name. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I said, his real name is a Cherokee name. I said, well, what is that? And he said, well, he's Jista. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, the Uneladanhi, the creator of all things, have given real names to all of the animals. And if you know those names, and you're in the woods, and you're lost, and you call them by their real name, their Cherokee name, they will help you. So suddenly I'm going, well, what's that animal? That's a squirrel. Oh, no, that's a Salala. And so by age 9, I was much like David Sedaris in his writing of Me Talk Pretty Someday. I mostly spoke Cherokee in nouns. Verbs were kind of a problem for me, and they still are in a Cherokee language. But he was a great man. And even though he lived a very simple life as a 100% disabled veteran, he did well. Now, my grandmother, of course, she was descended from the Stars, and they were the tribal Illuminati. These were people that were treaty signers, and they were tribal officials, and she worked for the Indian Department in the 1930s and started schools.
Okay, I'm thinking about Belle Starr. Did she come from the Stars that you're talking about?
Yeah, she was not a Cherokee. She was just a deplorable woman who had married my great-great-grandfather's nephew, Tom Starr. The Starrs were a huge family. When they removed in the removal of the 1830s, the patriarch of the family, Caleb Starr, little Quaker boy who had run away from home in the early 1700s and intermarried among the Cherokees. Fascinating story I'd love to tell you just briefly. And so The star is actually a Northumbrian name. It's S-T-A-R-R, not like up in the sky. And in Middle English, it's pronounced starry, and it means hawk. And apparently, I had a grandfather, I will spare you of the greats, back during the time of the English Civil War, and he must have been a highly persuasive man because he raised an entire company of pikemen during the English Civil War. So how persuasive was he? We don't have any muskets. We don't have any swords. We have long pointed sticks, and we'll stand out in front of the guys in the back that are taking 30 minutes to make powder, load my wheel lock, and try to shoot these people that are charging at us in armor on heavy horses, and we'll keep them back with our big sticks. He apparently was successful and received a land bounty in North Ireland, County Meath, and they moved there, and there was a Quaker meeting house there in a place called Cootie Hill. So the stars, they become Quakers. And a couple of generations, someone says, well, land's kind of wearing out here. There's a whole colony over in America that's full of Quakers. And it's a place called Pennsylvania. And if we go there, we understand that it's something. So my family immigrate to what is now Lancaster. And then I'll speed up the story because grandmother dies, grandfather remarries, then grandfather passes away. And so now there's like 8 Quaker children that are in the hands of a Quaker stepmother. And according to my cousins back in Pennsylvania, who I still keep in touch with, they're always delighted to speak with me because they say, oh, you're Caleb's children. You're our Indian cousins. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They probably think we're living in teepees. But if you went to the Quaker faith, you would find that, and I think they still do this today, they worship separately. Women are on one side, men are on the other. And so the family story is she took the girls and the boys in the family after the funeral and lined them up, and by height and age, and she just starts going down the line. It's like, you know, Rebecca, you'll be in charge of the cooking. And she gets to the boys and it's like, you'll be in charge of the plowing. And she gets to my grandfather, Caleb Starr, who is 16 years old, and she said, I have apprenticed you to a hat maker in town, and you start there on Monday. So sure enough, Monday he shows up in a hattery in Lancaster, and he's there with other Quaker boys that have been apprenticed. And there's a young man sitting next to him by the name of Joseph McMim. And remember that name for just a moment. So they're sitting there making hats, and I like to think that the conversation kind of went this way. Is it Joseph? I don't know about you, but I really don't much care for making hats. And he says, you know, I have an uncle who is a crown trader. He has a license to trade with the Cherokee Indians in a place that he pronounces as Tanasi. He said, I bet if we went there, he'd put us to work. Now, according to my Quaker cousins back in Pennsylvania, young Caleb got up one morning and did something that he seldom did. He kissed all of his sisters that morning after breakfast. He said, I'm going into work. And he left the house, and he and Joseph McMim walked the Appalachian Trail all the way from Pennsylvania to Tennessee in a place called Delagoa. And they found his uncle, and he put them to work. And they were in the deer hide trade. And a couple of years later, he met the granddaughter of Nancy Ward, the beloved woman of the Cherokees. And I like to think he looked at her and said, how are you doing? And they got married. And there they had 9 kids that were, once again, 9 months and 10 minutes
apart. So this is your grandfather.
This is my grandmother. This is my grandmother, Hannah, who was a Cherry Star.
But he...
Oh, yes, my grandfather, right, Caleb, right, yes. He was my 6th grandfather. But much like another man that I know from Tulsa who moved there to simply be a radio announcer. See, it's about who you marry. And when young Caleb married the granddaughter of Nancy Ward, he married into Cherokee Illuminati. And he became a great intermarried citizen of the Cherokee Nation. He was revered for his leadership and his honesty. And they had quite the farm on Conasauga Creek in the Ocoee River Valley that today is a little place near Tellico Plains, and the mountain is still called Star Mountain. And they had orchards. I have been to where their cabin stood, and it's a sacred place in our family.
Did you have brothers or sisters?
I have one sister who is older by 7 years. She's the smart one in the family. Her name is Linda D. Hannah. We call her LD. She was named for our great aunt, LD Starr, who was the first, she graduated from the Jalagi Agea Junta Skwosti Junta Na, which is, and for Cherokee listeners out in the future, I will say Jalagi Iwo Jinit Losta. My Cherokee's not so good, but what I said was it's the place where the big girls learn. It was the Cherokee Female Seminary. Chief John Ross, who was my blood quantum, was very keen on establishing educational institutions among the Cherokees, and so we used part of our removal annuity monies, and he established a seminary for men and for women. And we hired teachers from Mount Holyoke, just down the road from Harvard, and they came to Park Hill. And the first graduating or opening day was May the 7th of 1851. The male seminary opened on May the 6th. We don't celebrate the males so much because the women have had a reunion every year except for the American Civil War and during COVID in 2020 when Jay Hanna was president of the seminarians, which will meet on May the 7th again.
Wow.
And we celebrate the educational traditions of the Cherokees.